steps to the mic with a boom ping ping. Wisdom sharper than a bee's fierce sting. Words like fireflies that light the night. He turns the dark into blazing bright. Boom ping ping, the truth takes wing. Milwaukee's voice, let the city sing. Boom ping ping, hear the freedom ring. Sherwin's the king, all the airwaves king. The ground unveils the truth where lies abound. Politics, justice, social streams. He molds the chaos into dreams. No silence here, just the sound of change. Boom, ping, ping, rearrange ya. Boom, ping, ping, the truth takes wing. Milwaukee's voice, let the city sing. Boom, ping, ping, hear the freedom ring. Sherwin's the king, all the airwaves king. Through the static, through the noise, he amplifies the people's voice. Boom, ping, ping, like a heartbeat's call. He's got the wisdom to break down walls. Yeah. La, 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 la.
Good morning. Welcome to the program. Today is Friday. You made it to August 7th, 2026. Couple of things. Today is the last day to register to vote. If you are going to cast an early voting ballot at one of the different sites we have throughout the city of Milwaukee, you still can register to vote on election day, which is Tuesday, August 11th. If you plan on voting early, though, today is the last day in which you can register. And if I'm not mistaken, today must be the last day of early in-person voting at the sites that we have in the city of Milwaukee. I'm going to go through a listing of the sites just so you have it top of mind. The Good Hope Library, the hours are from 12:30 until 7:30. The Midtown Voting Center at 4170 North 56th Street from 8:30 until 5:30 are their hours of operation. The Tippecanoe Library, 3912 South Howell Avenue, their hours are 12:30 until 7:30. Of course, the good old Washington Park Senior Center, 4420 West Bleet, 9 a.m. until 4 p.m. The Zablocki Library, 35th in Oklahoma, from 12:30 until 7:30, and the Zeidler Municipal Building from 9 a.m. until 6 p.m. So today is the last day in which you will be able to register. Also, at 11 a.m., I will be joined by the chair of the Legislative Black Caucus and the senator representing the good people of the 4th Senate District, Dora Drake, is going to be in studio with us, and she is going to share her thoughts on why she is endorsing David Crowley to be the next governor of the state of Wisconsin. And I find it a little unusual, and the timing is odd, but the timing of this entire election cycle has been odd. Everything has just been late or misaligned, and some things just didn't really make any sense, like the timeline of some of the candidates, when they decided to get in the race, when they decided to get out of the race. But the most perplexing thing is the number of people that are still in the race. But it also is not customary for an incumbent Democrat. That's why the Tony Evers endorsement of David Crowley is so unique. It isn't often that an incumbent Democrat endorses one Democrat over another in a primary. Primaries are for primary voters to decide based upon whatever the issues are, whatever the sentiment is about politics at the time, but also, most importantly, the strength of the campaign to gain momentum. Primary voters make that decision. They narrow down very crowded fields. And if you can recall any other election, especially when there are much discussed primary elections, look at presidential primaries. They're insane. They're very crowded. You have a bunch of different ideas that are represented. Some are mainstream, some are middle of the road and moderate. Some are absolutely insane, completely and totally off the wall. And I can remind you of the year 2016. I brought up the year 2016 a lot because so many things happened then a decade ago that are very relatable to what is happening right now. I think most folks, if you're just getting involved in politics or you recently started following it, it doesn't make any sense. And if you feel that way, I completely and totally understand why this makes zero sense to you. It oftentimes defies logic. So that is why looking backwards and seeing, okay, where have we been in a similar situation before? And then using that retrospective to apply some logic to today. It's not always 100%, but it gives a pretty decent indication because for the most part, Americans, and dare I say even Wisconsinites, are relatively predictable when the climate exists in a particular way. If I go to the presidential contest in 2016 where the Republicans were completely discombobulated, you got to keep in mind they had not won a national election in two presidential cycles. That means that your party, at least at the national level, is ineffective. And so they had to go back to the drawing board, the Republican Party did. They didn't know what Republican voters wanted. Republican voters were either staying home or they were switching party. Something unusual was going on that allowed for Barack Obama to get elected not once, but twice. There are also some cultural elements as well. If you are even the slightest bit familiar with the United States of America, race does play a role in a lot of stuff, dare I say almost everything. So not only can the Republicans, this is back then, not only could they not win in national contests two presidential elections in a row, a very unlikely person based on America's history got elected and got reelected. That told the Republican Party that they had to go completely back to the drawing board and start from scratch. And that's why you had a Republican presidential primary that was really, really crowded. I think there may have been 15, 16, even 17 people. That primary was so crowded that when they had debates, they had to schedule them on two consecutive nights. You can't fit everybody on the stage. Some of them are fat and took up a lot of stage. Chris Christie took up a Trump's fat, too. Now, he is. He's a fat boy. He loves to eat McDonald's, but he balances it out with Diet Cokes. So there were so many Republicans running. They had to have their debates on two separate nights because it was too many fat people and just too many people in general. Because it showed that their party was discombobulated and they didn't know which direction they were going to go in. They had to try something. So you have a crowded primary. In Wisconsin, we have a crowded primary too. Because the Democratic Party does not know, as a response to Trump nationally, the Democratic Party does not know what it needs to do. Kamala Harris lost in 2024, so that means whatever Democratic politics was, whatever Democratic campaigns were, at least in the state of Wisconsin, we don't know what sticks to the wall. And that's why you had a whole bunch of people throwing their hat in the ring to run for governor, just like you had a whole bunch of people who threw their hat in the ring to run for president in 2016. Here is where you need to be particularly cautious, and this is where 2016 and 2026 will diverge quickly. When you have a large group of people running for office in a primary, in a very well-studied and watched election cycle like 2016 was and like 2026 is, because this is the first midterm election since Donald Trump won the presidency in 2024. In 2016, you had two terms of Democrat Barack Obama. The Republicans had to go back to the drawing board. And they had everybody and their mother that was running for the presidency, or at least vying for the Republican nomination, you see. When you have a crowded field, and this part is true. the craziest ideas win. Far too many Republicans in 2016 were splitting the common sense vote. They were splitting the traditional Republican family values vote. They were splitting the what people thought Republican candidates for president should be. Donald Trump came in and he was insane. Here's the thing about people that are insane that are also registered to vote. And I don't necessarily like that ratio of sanity to voting participation because it'll screw everything up. It'll gum up the works. The people that were supporting Donald Trump, knowing who he was, now we got to know him better. They were not going to be moved by any of those other status quo, regular, boring, run-of-the-mill Republicans, even if they were very conservative, even if they were much more moderate. They wanted something that was new and revolutionary and evolutionary. And Donald Trump was a outsider, and he was going to drain the swamp, and he was going to deport all of the illegals, and he was going to stop the foreign wars. He's a businessman, and we were going to get the economy going again. First lie he told. Second, actually, first one was Barack Obama wasn't a citizen. The next one was the economy was not working well. We went from a bankrupt nation in a recession, housing foreclosure crisis, two wars, banks weren't lending, our automakers were going belly up. We went from that to breaking records on the stock market and everybody had health insurance. Donald Trump lied and convinced his crazy followers that the economy was bad because it was bad for them. Poor, sad white folks that couldn't find a footing even in a good economy, they were desperate. And Donald Trump was promising them something. These people were insane. And yes, I will call people in this country insane because some of you are. I can tell by the output of your decisions. I can even tell by how some of y'all dress that you're crazy. You ever see somebody that wears stripes and polka dots and then a hat and then earrings that don't match? And there's this thing that the kids do. The kids do a thing. I don't know if they still do the thing. Maybe they still do the thing. Actually, I don't even really care, but I notice the thing that the kids do. They'll wear two shoes that don't even match. Why would you? What's wrong with you? Were you not loved? And here's something else that they do. We're starting hot today. They wear socks that don't match. I can't do that. I can't put on two socks that don't match. You know what it feels like when I'm wearing two socks that don't match? Was I traumatized as a child? But my socks have to match. The kids nowadays, they don't even care if their socks match. You know when you tie a shoe, let's say you're walking. You're minding your own business. You're doing what you do. I don't know, maybe you're looking for drugs. I don't know what you're doing. I'm not asking you what you're doing. You're just walking. And then you notice, oh, one of your shoes is untied. And you say, oh, I don't want to trip. I don't want to fall. I'm going to stop and I'm going to tie my shoe, okay? And you tie it, and it's freshly tied, and it's tight. It's a tight fit. It's a tight, nice little bow. But your other shoe that wasn't untied, it's a little bit looser. Because remember, you just tied your left shoe because that shoelace came untied. But you didn't tie the right shoe because why would you? Because it was already tied. When I wear socks that don't match, it feels like one shoelace is tighter than the other. Is this just me? Maybe it is. Thank you for saying it's just me, Xavier. A lot of what I'm going to say today is just me stuff.
No, I was confirming that it's insane.
Oh, thank you. A confirmation of something I said. When you have a very crowded field and you have a political party that does not know which direction it's going to go in, the Democrats right now in the state of Wisconsin do not know what direction they're going to go in. Because it seemed to us, at least in the state of Wisconsin, I can't speak for other states, battleground states, and the rest of the nation, but we thought that the Kamala Harris campaign in the state of Wisconsin was one that was going to work. We maybe discounted or over-indexed for her gender and her race. Maybe we did, maybe we didn't. Maybe we under-indexed the impact of the transgender issue and girls and boys' bathrooms and boys playing on girls' sports teams. Maybe we overlook some of that stuff, but what it told the Democrats is that a very well-funded campaign with a charismatic candidate. Now, there was some back and forth in the 2024 presidential race, just like we had some back and forth here in Wisconsin's governor's race, right? Was Joe Biden going to stay in the race? Was he going to get out? Was Joe Biden going to run for a second term? Do you remember that back and forth? Also very similar to the back and forth that we've seen here in Wisconsin. It is also reflective of a party that does not know what direction to go in. Joe Biden was a stopgap to prevent Donald Trump from getting reelected in 2020 because you had everything coming to a head. We had an economy that was messed up by COVID. You had COVID itself. You had the argument over vaccines and the anti-vaxxer movement and the suburbs that are more conservative wanting to open and the cities that kept everything closed. The kids weren't in school anymore. You had the whole impact of George Floyd. There was literal social and health and medical turmoil going on in the country. Joe Biden was seen as a safe, reliable stopgap. Nobody really loved him. Nobody got excited about him. But it was a way in which we could get the country back on some kind of sane footing, and then we would move forward. But Joe Biden was not the answer because he could not be the future of the Democratic Party because Joe Biden is 497 years old. Joe Biden's slaves probably don't even know that they're free yet. That's how old he is, okay? And then you had all of the back and forth. Was he going to run again? And then he had the debate. Remember the debate where he lost his mind? Medicare, and then everybody thought that he had a stroke, thought that he was just too old. They thought he had dementia. Do you know what that actually was? And I feel bad because I participated in the chorus of saying very unflattering things about Joe Biden, and because I knew what was at stake. It was so bad. You remember how bad he gaffed during that debate?
That was crazy. I was literally cringing the whole time.
Oh, it was so bad. I was like, oh, it's over now. It was so bad that Donald Trump was like, oh, I'm not even going to touch that.
Yeah.
He mentioned Trump was just like, yeah, I'm not really sure what he said. And then Trump, because you know Trump is going to take a jab at you, but Trump was like, oh my God, what did I just witness? And Trump just went on. But here's the thing. A month later, he dropped out. And then, of course, we're quote unquote stuck with Kamala in the Wisconsin race for governor. Sarah Rodriguez was in. She dropped out. David Crowley was in. He dropped out. He got back in the race. Mandela got in the race in the first place. He stayed in too long. Then Mandela gets out, I don't know, a week ago, because there was scandal broiling. And then you have Francesca Hong. Similar to Donald Trump, her path has always been clear because her voters don't fit into the categories that are offered by the other candidates. So 2016 offers a pathway for the least likely candidate because oftentimes their pathway and the voters that they can entice will not vote in support for anybody else because they are just as insane as the candidate themselves. And here we are. I'm going to take a break. When I come back, I'm going to ask you guys a fundamental question. Who do you trust? Marquette University conducted a poll and asked people that exact question. Who do you trust? And we found out that, believe it or not, the older you are, the more trusting you are of people. So, you know, the old folks, the baby boomers and whatnot, have the most trust. They also have the motto that I think is kind of faded for modern times. Trust everybody until they give you a reason not to. That's the dumbest advice. As birth cohorts get younger, the trust erodes very, very quickly. And it also may explain why younger voters, they don't trust this system. They don't trust capitalism. They don't trust older people. They don't trust politics. And when there is someone of their age cohort that is also mistrustful of the system, you can galvanize. It's weird because you can galvanize a group of people that nobody trusts, and you can engender their trust by also telling them you don't trust anybody yourself. So I'm going to try and demystify and provide some clarity today with hopefully worthwhile results. You are listening to The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 101.7 FM. I'll be right back.
Don't touch that dial. The Truth with Sherwin Hughes will be right back on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 101.7thetruth.com.
educators.
You are listening to The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 101.7thetruth.com.
The Marquette Law School poll, national survey, has dived into the question of trust in the age of cell phones, the internet, social media, and dating apps, long past the age of black and white television. In four polls conducted with 4,500 respondents in 2026, 77% of those born before 1960. So let's see. If you were born in 1960, you're 66 years old. Okay. In four polls conducted with 4,500 respondents in 2026, 77% of those born before 1960 say most people can be trusted. A markedly high level of interpersonal trust. That also explains why every so often on local news, why there's a scam, everyone, going on. There's a Medicare, Medicaid fraud scam. People are calling your house and asking you a bunch of questions and asking for your social security number. It's always an old lady. I feel so bad for those people. But also, some of the worst human beings that we share this earth with are people that take advantage of other people's vulnerabilities and you steal from them. That's awful. I like money a lot, but it ain't the same if you got to, I almost said a bad word. If you have to screw somebody out of their money, that money is yucky money. That's dirty money. You got to lie to somebody. You got to trick somebody. You got to take advantage of somebody. And sometimes these people, they don't have anybody to tell them any different. All their friends are dead. Because when you're old, it's lonely, I come to find out. If you don't have a big family or like a church community or something, or you're not a part of a retirement community, I have to think about this. Well, maybe I won't have to think about it. I don't know. There might be a time. What if I live a long time? As of right now, I don't know if the odds are in my favor, but what if I get lucky? And then, like, the people that I call now and that I text now, that I hang out with socially now, there might be a time where all of them are dead. And it's just me going bowling by myself, wearing two bowling shoes that don't match. I'm old. My socks probably don't match either. I don't know what's going on. I'm at the bowling alley wearing some overalls. Over here like Joe Biden. Because I was going to tell you guys what that was when Joe Biden had that gaffe. It was proof that. It was like confirmation bias. Everybody thought, oh, Joe Biden is too old. The Democratic Party is too old. Joe Biden was elected because he was old and he had been around for a very long time. And we were very familiar with his policies. Even if we didn't like his policies, we knew what the hell they were. Joe Biden didn't shock anybody with anything he did. Joe Biden wouldn't just have a press conference and say, I'm going to deport a whole bunch of people and I'm going to put ICE in every single city and detain people. He was just steady. And that's what we needed at that time, because the world, if you remember, was in complete chaos. There was an American Revolution going on in the city streets of probably 100 different cities. There were protests. Some were peaceful. Some were not. A lot of cop cars got burned. There was this one scene that I'll never forget because I was riveted to, because most of us were at home during the COVID and then during the worst part of the George Floyd protest. Milwaukee got ransacked. But there was a protest in Los Angeles, and the police officers, that because there was a large march, and the march was heading toward maybe downtown L.A., might have been like Rodeo Drive. It was someplace where the protesters shouldn't have been going, and people were nervous. Business owners were nervous. Because, you know, a lot of businesses got their windows broken, et cetera, et cetera. So a lot of businesses were nervous. So the police showed up full riot gear. And they used their police vehicles, their cruisers, and they parked them bumper to bumper to block the street left to right. Right? Can you imagine that? So the street is blocked. The police cruisers are parked bumper to bumper from left to right. So when the protesters arrived at this particular area of downtown, they were blocked by the squad cars. Really bad planning on the police officer's part. So you have this barricade or barrier of police cars, and then behind those police cars on one side are the cops, full riot gear. They got their helmets on and their masks and their shields. They have it all. And then you have this growing group of protesters. It was so many of them. I watched this thing in real time because there was cameras everywhere. And the number of people was larger than even the width of the street. And the protesters approached this barricade of police cars. And for a moment, they stopped. Cops are on the other side of the police cars, right? So they have the protection of those squad cars. Do you know what the protesters did? They flipped all of the squad cars over. And then guess what the cops, remember the cops are in full riot gear. But here's the thing. They were probably outnumbered 10, 15, 20 to 1. And the cops turned around and they ran. I had never in my life seen anything like that. But then the police also realized that the squad cars that they arrived in, they couldn't leave in those squad cars because they were upside down. And, of course, the protesters and the rioters overtook whatever part of downtown that was. That was just one of the many fascinating things about the American Revolution that was taking place right in front of our faces. Not to be confused with what they tried to do with the Cory Ruiz protest. Yeah, not quite the same thing. I said all that to say this. Joe Biden stuttered on that stage because he was going through cancer treatment. That's what he was messed up. Now, he also was old as hell, too. And that probably should be reason enough to step down. But he knew that he was a steady hand. But that debate really accelerated the conversation for Joe Biden to withdraw from the race. But because he held on for so long, he should have dropped out that night. And it was very tough. And Jill wanted him to stay in the race because there was not a whole lot of trust between the Biden administration and Kamala Harris. They didn't get along. That's not uncommon for presidents and vice presidents to not get along. Oh, newsflash, Tony Evers didn't get along with Mandela Barnes at all. Their staffs didn't talk. Oh, y'all didn't know that? Mandela Barnes, as lieutenant governor, was an albatross around Tony Evers' neck. And when Mandela decides to quit his position as lieutenant governor to run for the U.S. Senate, while it did gum up the works a little bit, because that's a very unorthodox thing to do, I think some part of Governor Evers was actually relieved because Mandela was making a wonderful mess of things, not to mention the reason why he most recently dropped out and suspended his campaign for governor, the allegations that he was using his position as lieutenant governor to bed many young and impressionable women that wanted to get involved in Democratic Party politics. While he was lieutenant governor, he was doing all of that stuff. And here's the thing. Everybody knew he was doing it, including Governor Evers. And it was just ugly. And then Mandela decides to run for the U.S. Senate. Now, he dodged a bullet. And I think that at the time in 2022, they didn't bring up the accusations and allegations against Mandela because at the time, Donald Trump, I don't know what scandal Donald Trump was embroiled in, but they thought that if they brought up Mandela's background in that race against Ron Johnson, that it may have backfired on Ron Johnson, but it didn't matter because Ron Johnson won anyway. But Joe Biden was going through cancer treatment, and that messed his head up a little bit, messed his brains up. Now, we, of course, attributed to him being senile and having dementia, but the fact that he stayed in the race for so long did not sow more trust in Kamala Harris, because you would think Joe Biden would say, hey, I'm going to willingly step down and I'm going to now endorse my number two, the vice president, because I selected her to be on this ticket. He didn't do that. He held out, and he held out a little bit too long. The Marquette Law School poll national survey dived into the question of trust in the age of cell phones, the internet, social media, and dating apps, long past the age of black and white television. In four polls conducted with 4,500 residents in 2026, 77% of those born before 1960 say most people can, in fact, be trusted. So we want to ask you a real simple question on YouTube. Real simple, yes or no. Can most people be trusted? Oh, my God. Now, the poll is early. We just put it up 30 minutes ago. 80% of you say no. So I'm going to take a break, and I'm going to come back, and we're going to dive into this. It's an exquisite poll, actually, because it asks a very fundamental question that helps us better understand how fragmented our politics are. Because if you are younger, and we want young people to be engaged in politics because it is literally their future. If you're a young person right now, you are voting on what kind of old age you want to have. Because policy that is made right now can have a dramatic impact on your 40s, your 50s, your 60s, the tax structure, what the economy is, you see. But if you don't trust anybody, right, that also might guide your political decisions and who you vote for, including which party you vote for. Because if you don't trust these damn Democrats and you sure enough don't trust the Republicans, well, then maybe, just maybe, a hybrid, a Democratic Socialist or a progressive or a super liberal might be the way to go, only because they haven't made enough policy to sow your distrust yet. So they're the least damaged, they're the least dirtied up segment of American politics just because they don't get elected very often. The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 101.7 FM. We'll be right back.
Don't touch that dial. The Truth with Sherwin Hughes will be right back on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 101.7thetruth.com. This is The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 101.7thetruth.com.
It makes sense to me, even before I delve into the details of this poll. It's really fascinating, though. The older you are, the more you trust people. There's a sweetness to that. There's an innocence to that. And it reminds me of a time when people were fundamentally more decent. And sometimes, even on this program, we'll wax nostalgic about an African-American community from some time ago that was way more tight-knit. It just seemed like everything was better. People were more pleasant. You knew your neighbors. There was a profound understanding that you were there to take care of one another. The young people were much more well-behaved. Like, there was like a culture that was based on positivity and shared values. We had what is called a monoculture. We just all believed the same things. You work hard. You take care of your responsibilities, and then good things will come. It seems like as time has gone on, all of that has eroded. But you have to also look at, because this is America, you got to look at the economic times. When black people enjoy full employment, and 1970 is a very important year in the history of the city of Milwaukee. I know it seems like a million years ago, but we have not returned to what we had then. So 1970, my parents had just arrived in Milwaukee within the last 2 years. They both were starting their careers at the United States Post Office. They were dating other people. They hadn't met yet. Sherwin was still a long way off. I was still swimming around in Eugene. I was like, one day, I'm going to be on the radio. The year 1970, black male and white male unemployment in the city of Milwaukee was parity. It's 1%. 99% of both black men and white men were employed, and dare I say, gainfully. Now, there was a handful of low-wage, minimum-wage jobs back then, but those jobs were reserved for kids and like summer jobs. Most adults were making really, really good wages. And then you had a community that could rely on the low level of unemployment, full black employment in the city of Milwaukee. And then you can have shops, stores, restaurants, other services, dry cleaners that were all black owned because the income in the black community was so consistent that you could, in fact, take a risk, buy a building, start an operation, start a store, because as long as your community enjoyed full employment, you were going to make money. And also keep in mind, segregation was a factor as well, because if you were black in the black community, was everything that you needed, because you didn't know if you went out to the suburbs what was even going to happen to you. You didn't know if you were going to make it back. There's a period of time where like 60th and Capitol Drive was the suburbs. Capitol Court was the suburbs. You wouldn't dare go out to Mayfair. If I'm not mistaken, I think Mayfair is the oldest standing shopping mall still in operation. It opened in like 1952. So we had full employment. We had a tight-knit community, mostly tight-knit because of housing covenants. You couldn't move out if you wanted to. But everything that we needed was right there. And because it was a tight-knit community and everybody knew everybody, people would also take liberty to make sure that children were being well-behaved and that they were being disciplined. But as that employment number crept down over the years and when deindustrialization hit, you can almost put your finger on the exact moment when things started to unravel. But if you're from that era, those are your formative years. Imagine growing up in a black community where there was hardly any crime. You could play outside. You knew your neighbors. You knew your friends. Everybody. Y'all went to school together. Y'all went to church together. Y'all went to the restaurant together. And you grew up in a loving environment. And damn it, you might have even had two parents. If those are your formative years, that sticks with you. And as you get older, that doesn't leave you. You still have trust for people, especially black people, people that look like us. Talk to someone who looks like us, but I'm not entirely sure if I can trust him. Hello, Bob.
Hello, Sherwin. Listen, age affects people in different ways. Then, you know, that's why, look at Dr. Ponce. Mm-hmm. I think he's 85.
Dr. Who? Hold on now. Dr. Who now?
Ponce.
Ah, yeah, Dr. Ponce. Fancy.
Yeah, I think he's 85 and he looks and talks better than Trump or Biden. You know, and Biden, during that debate, he was so off, so just surprised that the moderator allowed Trump to lie so much. But I still think Trump would have beat him. And the other point, I'm getting you on the right trajectory today. And, you know, Trump just ran against the wind. And God and this country is not having a woman in that position, that powerful position, because that's one of the most powerful positions on this earth. So that hooligan didn't go against nobody but women, but Biden put a foot in his behind so hard that he don't even walk the same. He walks different. Look at the way he walks. That man walks different. Biden tore that butt up. And, you know, I want to get you on the right trajectory today, you know, because you started off good. I have to get you, think about this. Dr. Ponce is 85. He talks and looks, I think he's 85, and he talks and looks better than Trump and Biden because age affects people in different ways. You know, and ain't no man gonna run, a woman gonna run this powerful country. Not God is not going to allow it, and this country is not going to allow it. And then that's why Trump lucked up and got in, you know. So
Bob, do you have any idea how offensive you just were to the majority of my listenership, which is, in fact, women? You said that this is ordained from God, that a woman can't run the country. Don't you think that women would have something to say about that? Well, you
don't care. I think they are now. No.
Don't backtrack now, Francesca Hong. No. Stand on it. If you say a woman can't run the country, then say a woman can't run the country.
Well, a man can't have a baby, and a woman shouldn't be able to run this country. That's just the way it says it in the Word of God, that powerful position. I know you meant about being a church leader or whatever, but powerful position goes with the United States.
All right, let's leave it there, Bob. Let's leave it there. You're on a runway. We landed the plane. All right, now. Let's deboard.
All right.
Okay.
Talk to you later.
All right. He can say trajectory. That's, you know, it's a good 50-cent word at least. But can't say Fauci. He can say trajectory, but call him Dr. Fonzie. Oh, you know, Dr. Fonzie. Okay, that's.
Maybe the F is messing him up.
I don't know what his problem is. I mean, he's not entirely wrong in some of that, but I'm not going to agree with him while he's on the phone because then he won't shut up. I have long believed that black people that are involved in politics have a very unique opportunity to, especially when elections are close, we can be a deciding factor in Wisconsin in particular. Now, we are a small share overall population, an even smaller share of the voters, right? So we're about 4% of the overall population in the state of Wisconsin, but that's all African Americans. That's those that are sick, in jail, babies, children, toddlers, middle schoolers. And if you look at the slice of African Americans in the state of Wisconsin that are eligible and or registered voters, it's like maybe 2% if we're lucky, 1%. It's not a lot. But that 1% oftentimes is what can decide statewide contests. Do I need to remind you of the U.S. Senate primary in Michigan decided by 1 percentage point? And that 1 percentage point can kind of fluctuate from demographic group to demographic group. If young people are particularly motivated, and it seems like a lot of them are motivated by this brand of democratic socialism, then you can get your 1% from them. Because if a few more young people, 18 to 29, are involved and engaged, and they see something in a politician that they like, boom, that's where your 1% is. If you have a qualified African-American person running for office in the black community, it's really engaged, and you have a lot of movement and momentum in the black community, and a lot of people are knocking on doors and engaging black voters and getting black voters to register, well, then you can get your 1% from the African-American community. But because we here in the state of Wisconsin as voters, we can be a deciding factor. I know that when you weaponize whiteness against each other, a lot of times there can be a benefit for the black community, because if a white politician who might be insecure about the relationship with the black community, when they see that it was black voters that gave them the advantage, they will do more for black voters and black people in the black community than even a black elected official would. I need you to hear me. This is why I originally supported Joel Brennan, because I wanted to weaponize his whiteness and his insecurity with the black community for our benefit, because if he looked at the numbers, if he got through the primary, which, no way, Jose, he'd be like, holy smokes, the African-American community really showed up and showed out for me. Let me put a whole bunch of black people in my cabinet. Let me make sure I'm doubling down on African-American issues, because then Joel Brennan would see his political future tied to the progress of the black community. And all white folks want to brag about doing stuff for us. They always want. Well, guess what, blacks? Now you have better employment. Now you own more homes. Now you have more income because of me, blacks. I think it's cool that we can weaponize whiteness against each other, but I want to put a white person, a white man against another white man, and then African-Americans be the deciding factor, because then we get the most benefit from that. A guy named Ralph Northam, who was once upon a time the governor of Virginia, dude got caught in blackface in 1984. He didn't resign. He was like, sorry. It was what we were doing at the time. And black people, we know how white folks are. And we were like, ooh, that's racist. He was like, I'm going to do whatever the black community needs. He put together a legislative package that helped. If you look at Virginia, like African-Americans in Virginia are doing better than anywhere else. Joe Biden overperformed with the black community, right? Remember when Bernie Sanders was in the primary and then black voters started voting in those early primary contests and they showed out for Joe Biden? Joe Biden was like, got you. Don't even trip. He then selects Kamala Harris to be his vice presidential running mate. Nod to the black community. Then what does he do? Puts more black women on the federal bench than had ever served on the federal bench in the history of this country. Another nod to black people. Then puts Ketanji Brown Jackson on the U.S. Supreme Court. I'm going to rest my case and take a break. The Truth with Sherwin Hughes will be right back.
Don't touch that dial. The Truth with Sherwin Hughes will be right back on 1017 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com. You are listening to The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 1017 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com.
Tonight, feeling sexy in my mood. Yeah. Pink blush on my face, brown lip liner, lip gloss mood. Now he wanna lick my bum, but clock my raw to talk, talk, talk. Got him going crazy for that poo, na 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 na. I get what I want, I got that ooh shalaka laka. He do what I say for that ooh ma da da da.
I have to. I just have to play Pink Blush. I have to. It takes me over. Possesses my soul.
Hit a pause after that.
Huh? No pause.
Heavy pause.
No, I'm not pausing on anything. We're also not pausing on this election that's fast approaching, and I'm ready for it to come and go so we can analyze everything and get all angry and mad and start pointing fingers and blaming people. Don't blame black people. Whatever happens in this election, don't blame us. It's not going to be our fault. Place to blame somewhere else. Start blaming white women. Normalize blaming white women. But nobody wants to do that because they'll just start crying. Why are you? I don't like the way you're talking to us. And then we apologize to them. White people. Are you guys offended when I say white people? I know some white people. Oh, sure. Why are you? I'm just talking about a demographic group of people that have very, very predictable behaviors. I'm going to dive into this this trust survey more in hour two because I want to extrapolate. Ooh, that's a word for that ass. Some information out of this poll so we can have a better understanding of who we're dealing with and looking at younger people in a very particular way because when they look at us, they don't trust us worth of nothing. But I get it. If you grew up in the world of the virtual world and the internet, everybody's a catfish, especially with these filters. Like, why are you doing that? You don't look anything like that, ma'am. Cut it out. That's not it at all. How you don't even look even close to that. You don't look that way. Catfishing everybody. You can't believe anything because on the internet, you can reinvent yourself. You can be a whole troll. You can have, there are people that have, you know, their social media accounts, whatever, which is them, but then they'll have a fake Instagram, a Finsta. And then they have an account where it's just like a cartoon is the avatar, and that's where they go and they troll people. You don't even know who you're talking to sometimes. I firmly believe that when people post racist things on some of these comment threads and you click on the social media account and you can obviously tell it's fake, I bet you a third of them are actually black people. I think black people have an alter ego where they want to post racist stuff. I really think so. There was something that happened on a college campus. It might have been in Marquette where a black student, She didn't like her roommate. She got stuck with a roommate she didn't like. When I was in college, I chose the single room. I paid a lot more money for it, but you ain't putting me with some country white boy from Wild Rose, Wisconsin. That's an actual real place. Ain't no way. I couldn't take that kind of risk because some of the people that I went to school with at Oshkosh, they came right off the farm. Some of them was real cool, though. They were ignorant. But I'm glad that I was the first black person that they met because I was more tolerant, I think, of their ignorance. Because their ignorance was innocent. A lot of them are just very curious. Sherwin, are you in a gang? What's life like in Milwaukee? Does everybody have a gun? Yes, I'm in a gang, and yes, I have a gun, so watch your mouth.
Someone asked you that before?
Oh, my God, yes. And what's crazy is the 90s were a different time because no matter how small town you were, I mean, just devoid. It was, Mexicans weren't even in the small towns yet because white people were still doing their farm labor. They loved hip hop. They had a fetish for it. These white boys, because, you know, at the time, Tupac was out. Biggie and Tupac were still alive. And they all listened to hip hop. And so that's what they knew. Because if you don't know anybody, if you don't know any non-gangster rap black people, you assume that, right, that that's what black people are. But I'm glad that I was the black person that they met. But I couldn't take the risk of being roommates with one of them because that would just be a little bit too much. So at Marquette a few years back, I think it was at Marquette, a black girl found a noose hanging in her dorm room or on the door of her dorm room because she wanted to get rid of her roommate. And she's like, look, everybody, my roommates are racist. My roommate hung a noose on our door. She's got to get out of here. Well, we come to find out the black girl hung the damn noose. So sometimes I think we indulge a sinister side of ourselves, engage in racism against other black people. Because, I mean, we do. Black people are very stratified. There's those of us, and then there's others of us as well. Still think that weaponizing our vote for the benefit of our community is how you play chess politically and not checkers. Let's discuss even more on the other side. The Truth with Sherwin Hughes will be back for hour two.
Don't touch that dial. The Truth with Sherwin Hughes will be right back on 1017 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com.